Hello, everybody, and welcome into another episode of the Comics Experience Make Comics podcast with Andy Schmidt and myself, Joey Groh, talking about questions that you submit either through the Comics Experience website at info@comicsexperience.com. You tweet at Andy, Comic Experience, on Twitter, or go to the Comics Experience Facebook page and ask a question. Andy, you had a couple that came out of a Facebook post recently. Is that right? I think that's where Klaus's question comes from.
Yeah. No, it was on my personal page even. I didn't even do that on the comics. But yeah, on the Comic Experience one, I did it on my personal and just asked what you guys were thinking about.
Nice.
And we got some responses.
And very different responses. Klaus is very different from what might normally be asked. I'm curious your take on this. Klaus asks, what to look out for when creating a comic IP that should maximize potential to make it into a TV show? So that's already kind of coming at everything from maybe a little bit of a different angle than we normally talk about.
Yes. So usually we talk about making comics, not making comics to make something else. Just a clarification. Just thinking for those of you that may or may not know, IP stands for intellectual property, which basically means when you're creating what he's really asking is when you're creating a new series from scratch, you're not working on something pre-existing. And so you're not just creating a single story, but you're creating the world and you're creating all the characters for the first time. How's he put it? You maximize for that thing to grow and become a TV show, presumably, I would think, or a movie. I assume Klaus would be okay with it becoming a movie.
Sure.
But actually, I mean, let's be honest. You and I were talking before this show about maybe not even tackling this question because it seems like it's more of a question about TV and moviedom rather than comics. And you made this very good point, which is that a lot of people making comics have this in their head. They're sitting there thinking, yeah, this would make a great TV show.
Right.
Which I thought was really a smart point, and that's why we're tackling it. So I obviously had seen this question before, and then when we were talking about it, I was thinking about it again. And what I have realized is that usually when somebody designs a comic book to be good material for TV and film, they're usually making a mediocre to bad comic. And so it's not always true. And I'm not saying like you can't think, hey, there's a potential here. But when you're designing something for one medium but creating the actual material for another, the problem is you're going to bump into the weaknesses of the medium that you're using. So if you're creating something for a TV show, but you're to be a TV show, a good TV show, but you're trying to make it a comic book, you're going to bump into the weaknesses of comics, and you're not going to be able to use the strengths of TV show. I mean, I'm not saying that there's no overlap between strengths in one and the other, and
sure,
but that's typically what happens. Also, our audiences these days tend to be pretty savvy about this kind of thing, and if they think they're reading something where you really are just, you know, it reads like a TV show pitch,
right?
They tend not to respond favorably to that kind of thing, because if they want to read a comic, they want to read a comic. They don't pick up comics to think about what a great TV show it would have been.
Right.
And if we want to watch TV, we watch TV. So I said this to you before we started. I think ultimately my answer to this question is don't do that. And I don't mean that in any kind of harsh way. And again, I don't mean that you can't have that in your head. It's like, okay, I can design this so that if it went this way, it could become a good thing. That one of the things that a lot of people don't understand about when something shifts from one medium to another is from comics to TV or from a TV show that, you know, there's a licensed comic book, you have to look at what works in the medium. Adaptation is really important, and changes have to be made in order for an adaptation to be good.
Right.
And I've got some pretty good examples for this. One of them is the Watchmen film from a couple of years ago, which on the one hand is extremely faithful to the comic book, which is to say that there is a lot of scenes transcribed word for word,
right,
and shot for shot. And yet, it doesn't really work as a film. I'm not saying there aren't other changes, but it doesn't really work. It gets long in the tooth. It sort of drones on and on. That stuff was meant to be read. It was not meant to be said in most cases. And that's not to say that there aren't scenes that are verbatim that work. It's not like they all fall apart, but they could have been stronger had they been designed for the medium in which they were portrayed in right. the film. It could have been a much stronger film, I think. And then you've got some other things which are quite different from the source material, but are ultimately more faithful. Like that Watchmen film kind of misses the point in a lot of ways. And some changes could have made that not been the case. And I don't mean to dog that film. It's true of lots of films, but we're talking comics, and that's a big deal as a comic. So
sure.
That's the one I chose.
Easy to spot too.
Right. Yeah. And I think enough people, you know, listening to this probably have seen it. So, you know, whereas you look at something like, you know, we were talking about the Captain America films in our last episode. You look at something like Captain America Winter Soldier, which in some respects is an adaptation of the Brubaker, Epting, and Lark run on Captain America. It's where that storyline ultimately, you know, sort of came from. But it's not that story just put on paper. It's quite different in execution, but man, does it get to the heart of what that story is about. And it gets to the heart of what Captain America is about. So, but it's by no means anywhere close to a scene by scene sort of, you know, adaptation. So those are sort of my keeping it within the superhero genre, you know, sort of examples of that. But the Winter Soldier functions very, very well as a comic, as Watchmen does as a comic. But when they were adapted into the film, one made a lot of changes so that Civil War is a very powerful, a very effective movie experience. Or not Civil War, sorry, that one just came out. Winter Soldier is a very, I haven't seen it yet. the Winter Soldier one is a very effective adaptation. It's a very effective movie. And while The Watchmen is on the surface a very faithful adaptation, it sort of falls apart a little bit as a movie. So when you're designing something to go between media, make sure that your characters are awesome and make sure that your storyline is awesome, but execute it for the media that you're in the present. You can figure out how to make it a good movie or a good TV show later. But if you put out a mediocre comic, the chances of anybody being interested in it as a TV show are pretty slim. But if you put a great comic, then people will be willing to do the work to make it into a great TV show.
And to be fair, a lot of times, just in terms of pitching, you know, what is your comic about? You might be saying a movie and a TV show rather than a comic. What's your comic? Oh, it's like Spider-Man and The Walking Dead. Usually not necessarily where you're going to come from when you're pitching a comic to somebody, maybe on the fly at a convention or if you're tabling somewhere. So there's a lot of, I guess, thinking about TV that, you know, maybe there was a different angle with the question in some ways. And I know contractually, at least some of the contracts that I've seen, when you are talking to a publisher, your TV rights and film rights come up. That's something that you have thought about, and at least in some capacity, and maybe you aren't addressing creative changes or, you know, necessarily running any of that. You're just giving your okay to say, yep, here's what the contract says. But at the same time, I get where maybe you're thinking about that as, this could be a cool TV show. As you were talking, that kind of occurred to me that, you know, maybe that was a part of it.
Yeah. I mean, if you're doing a contract with a publisher, they're interested in your work, then they may very well be interested. In all likelihood, they're interested in having a piece of the media licensing, merchandising rights, if not having control of those rights.
Right.
You know, that is more of a contract question, and that has how you're going to come at that, what you're going to think about that is going to have to do largely with kind of where you are in your career, probably, and and that, you know, that sort of thing. I mean, that is a big question. But yeah, I mean, it always comes up because you either have to say yes, the publisher is baked in on that stuff, or you have to say no, they're not. I mean, it's going to be in your contract one way or the other. But yeah, I mean, it's in some cases, it's nice to have a partner in that that has connections in LA and Hollywood and that kind of thing. And then if you already have really good connections in LA and Hollywood, you may not want to have somebody that doesn't have as good of connections as you in control. In those sorts of things, I always look at like, well, what are they bringing? If I'm in negotiating a contract like that, what I look at is what are they bringing to the table when it comes to the media rights, when it comes to the entertainment rights? Does this publisher have experience? Do they have a track record? Do they have the people and the resources in place in LA or in, you know, a foreign movie market, you know, potentially? Do they have those people in place that have those connections that can have those conversations versus who do I have in place?
Right.
You know, I have my own folks that I deal with in Hollywood, and they're pretty effective. And so if a publisher is just saying, well, print this comic and we'd like, you know, a bunch of money if you go out and sell it by yourself, then I'm less likely to want to cut them in on it. But if they're actually bringing something to the table, you know, something that I don't have, then it's a conversation I'm happy to have, you know, and hopefully we'll find common ground that works for everybody.
Excellent. I think that's a great summation of that question. Do you have anything coming up on the comics experience front that folks should know about?
We still have some courses open for enrollment. Intro to writing and got our digital painting class coming up. Intro to coloring is open for enrollment. And then as always, the Creators Workshop, which is really just seems to be firing on all cylinders right now. Lots of critiques. Almost every script that goes up. In fact, it may actually be every script. I think it might actually be every script for the last couple of months that has gone up has received a critique from a professional editor or comics editor or writer, as well as getting the peer critiques. So there's been a ton of learning, and we're seeing projects. You know, these things kind of always go in cycles. So you see projects start, you see like all projects happening, and you're like, holy moly, like this. Yeah, the workshop's taking off like a rocket ship, and then people kind of go back into development mode.
Right, right.
and so we're seeing people coming out of development mode. I'm seeing more and more posts of, you know, what we call them project threads on the boards, where it's, you know, project whatever the title of their project is, and they start talking about, you know, the artist and I are working together now, or if it's an artist, you know, I found a writer and we've developed this thing and here's the first pages, and you're starting to see these projects, you know, start to come together again. And so, I'm hoping that in the next couple of months, you know, we're going to see, you know, several projects leave the talent incubator that is the workshop and join the world, or Kickstarters are going to start launching again and all that kind of stuff. I mean, there's always a new Kickstarter coming from one of us, but it's true.
It's true.
But they're mostly successful. I mean, they put together really good projects, and we talk about Kickstarter and crowdfunding all the time, and we're getting pretty savvy at it. So we know how to attract folks, which is cool, which is great. I mean, that's what the whole thing is for. It's for us to learn and grow and become better at all manner of making comics, and that, unfortunately, for most of us look at it as unfortunately, means figuring out how to get funding.
That part. That's another episode. Let's leave that for next time.
But yeah, so anyway, we got a lot of stuff. We got a lot of stuff going on, and we'll have more announcements. More announcements soon. And we've got some convention appearances coming up in June. Robert Atkins and I will both be at Denver Comic Con.
Nice. If you have a question you'd like to hear answered on the podcast, you can email info@comicsexperience.com. You can also tweet at Andy. He's @comicexperience on Twitter. And there's also the Comics Experience Facebook page if you'd like to ask anything there. Or even if you're on the workshop and you go over to the Ask Andy thread, put it there. Let's see how many different places we could fracture this to. That's how this branding works, right? Anywhere.
Right.
Response, tweet, carrier pigeon, fortune cookie, yell as you drive by. Until next time, keep making comics.